Und wir machen jetzt auf Englisch weiter. Als nächstes
Rogowski with us. He's an author, researcher and a natural health proponent. And he has actually done some research on the WHO's International Health Regulations Review Committee, which is meeting in secret this week. And that's actually, you know, what Whitney Webb just alluded to, that Ferrara is going to have all that power in case all these regulations come through, if I understand that correctly. So, James, are you with us?
I am. I don't know if you can see me, but I am here.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's great. I don't know if you would like to give our audience a little bit more details on your background, and then after that, maybe you would like to continue with the important information that you may have for us.
Yes, I'll certainly say a little bit of myself. And what I actually would like to do is maybe after that, take 5 or 10 minutes to just show you the evidence, because what I've been doing for the past year almost is just reading very boring WHO documents after watching their websites, because what they do is they will make a change on their website, and then they will say something like, oh, we will be posting information here at some point in the future. And they wait and they wait and they wait, and then, you know, something comes up on their website, and it's not like you get a notice or, you know, they tell you that they made the change. So pretty much one of the things I've been doing for the last year is just visiting their website at the pages that I think, you know, information will be posted, and, you know, a couple times a day, just check to see if they posted it. And as soon as I, you know, find that they did post the information, well, you know, then I have something very boring to read until you find, you know, the part of it where they tell you what it is exactly that they want to do to take over. And so I first got involved in this, you know, a little bit about myself, I guess, if people care. I'm 62 years old. I live in California. I studied computer science in school, but I decided that I wanted to work as a carpenter. And so what I have is a skill set of organizing people and organizing a nation. And so I had a change of life in pretty much in the middle of my life, moved out to California, and became a manager and a buyer for a mom-and-pop nutrition store. And so for 15 years, I was down in the rabbit hole of natural health, wrote a couple of books. I've always given them away for free. If anybody wants to go to yourdoctorisaliar.com and download a book about the lies about cholesterol, I stand by that title, and it's even more true now than it was a dozen years ago when I wrote that. When the coronavirus situation started, you know, 3 years ago, it's probably about this time 3 years ago, I read, you know, the report that had been buried, you know, for many, many months, a couple years now, where it inferred that, or it implied that this was, you know, potentially the sequences in the I'm going to just say bioweapon, were not something that would occur in nature. It really got my attention. And so throughout the whole past 3 years, I had up to 6 different websites dedicated to, you know, really the health issue. That was, you know, that was what I was knowledgeable about. And I am of the mindset that, you know, quite frankly, this was not surprising to me in any way. My personal philosophy, belief about what's going on here is that we're dealing with just organized crime on an unbelievable scale. The pharmaceutical industry and the World Health Organization do not care about your health. They actually work in a system that treats symptoms with poison. And the poison is carefully selected to neutralize your symptoms while it's actually making you more ill. And so drugs and injectables, in my view, are actually customer acquisition products. They take healthy people, they convince them that they're sick through some test or some such thing. They then poison them in a targeted way so that their symptoms, you know, get neutralized a little bit. And then those poisons damage their internal organs, and they have to have tests because they know that happens. And the testing is just designed to convince those people that they have another problem, they need another poison, they have another problem, they need another poison. You know, I've seen people on up to 20 different medications, 20 different poisons. It's amazing that they can survive. And some of the data that has been out there over the past couple of years actually correlates most accurately, in my mind, not to pre-existing conditions or, and it's a term I don't like, comorbidities. That's not what it correlates to. It correlates to the many medications, the many poisons that those people were on. And so their liver function and their kidney function and their nervous function, their circulatory system were damaged by taking all of the medications for their comorbidities. The reason why they had those comorbidities was because they were being poisoned by the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex. When the injections were being talked about, it was no surprise. They never, all anybody had to do was read the clinical trials data on clinicaltrials.gov. And I take that back, not the data, the endpoints that were planned. And so it's just been astonishing to me, you know, the revelation that, oh, you know, the injections did not show that they prevented transmissibility or illness or death or any of that sort of thing. That was known in mid-2020 when they posted the clinical trials criteria, and none of those things were endpoints of the trial. The endpoints of the trial were, oh, you got a positive PCR test at an unknown cycle threshold and a cough. And so all they were testing was nothing. You know, the criteria for determining which group a person in the trial was in was all anybody had to do was look at that and know that the whole thing was fraudulent. If somebody got one injection or two injections, or it was 14 days after their first two injections, they were still counted in the non-vaccinated cohort. And so you just look at that and you go, well, if anybody had any side effects from the shot, it was attributed to the placebo group. They were considered non-vaccinated. So anybody who was paying attention and just looked at how the study was designed, you don't need to be Nostradamus. You could see the fraud on the horizon. Okay. And so I was very much focused on all of that. I was in August of 2020, actually earlier than that, I think it was June, I spoke with Jennifer Hibbard, and she had gotten information about a care facility that had given ivermectin to the people who were being cared for a outbreak, I think it was, of scabies, which ivermectin is, you know, used for. And they found that the people who were being in the care facility, the elderly in the care facility, didn't get sick, but all the staff members did. And so that was like one of the first not purposefully designed, you know, studies. It was just sort of an observation of really a placebo-controlled study. And so in August, Dr. Barodi from Australia put out, you know, stuck his neck out and was one of the first ones to talk about ivermectin. And so, you know, in August of 2020, I'm, you know, screaming at the top of my lungs about ivermectin. Not that it's a cure-all, right? Because it's never like one thing, but the benefits that people were getting and, you know, I mean, some of the amazing stories. And then Dr. Boros in Florida, you know, was using it. And also other doctors in Florida were using it. And so, you know, then the Dark Horse podcast talked about it, and Dr. Corey presented information in front of the Senate, and you know the rest of what happened there. About a year ago, February 7th is a momentous day for me. On January 21st, 2022, the FDA authorized, not approved, but authorized the injectable use of Remdesivir for outpatient use in infants. I'm just going to say that again. January 21st, the FDA authorized the outpatient injectable use of Remdesivir for infants. And I went ballistic. I'm like, you have to be kidding me. All right. And so I published a couple of articles about that. And I got an email on February 7th from my internet provider that I had been using for more than a decade, you know, doing things about health. And everything I had done for the past 10 years was gone. Almost everything was gone. And I took it as a sign that, you know, when one door closes, another door opens. And that was a little bit of a personal great reset for me. Okay. All of the work that I had done was mostly gone. And I came across information about a proposed pandemic treaty. And the pandemic treaty is not what I want to talk about today, but I'll mention it a little bit. My goodness, there are so many proposals, you know, last year about the pandemic treaty. All of these very well-financed organizations who are saying, oh, we have to have a treaty to enshrine in a legally binding document. Preparedness, you know, prevention, preparedness, response, and recovery. And the money that went behind these proposals was amazing. And I spent a whole month just, you know, digging into what they were proposing. And on March 24th, I published an article about the pandemic treaty on Substack, because that's where I landed. You know, I published a couple of articles, and then I fell down the rabbit hole of the pandemic treaty. But at that time, it was not actually a treaty. It was not a document. It was a bunch of proposals, and they were talking about getting together. They formed an intergovernmental negotiating body to craft such a treaty, but it did not exist. Okay, it was just a bunch of proposals. And so I said, well, you know, everybody else is making their proposals, I'll make one too. And so I posted the peoplestreaty.com. And I encourage everybody to go to the peoplestreaty.com. I published it on March 25th of 2022. And it's essentially, wait a minute, we have unalienable human rights, and they're not derogable during someone's declared emergency. That's not what unalienable means. Unalienable means they are rights that cannot be infringed upon. I don't care who says it's an emergency. And 3 days later, I find a document that changed my life. I was reading a blog, and it said, oh, we have uncovered, you know, we have obtained this document. And I clicked on the button, and the document opened up, and I started reading it, and I had a lightning bolt down my spine. It was like, oh, this is important. And what it was the Biden administration had publicly, but very quietly, submitted proposed amendments to the international health regulations. And part of what was in there was, you know, giving much more legal authority to the WHO and the Director General. And if you recall, in I think it was mid to late April, I was here to present with you then. And all I have been doing since then is presenting evidence, you know, their documents that they post. But, you know, why would anybody know that they posted them? You know, they post them on their website. It's not like the mainstream media says, hey, go to the WHO website and go read this because it's really important. And so, you know, technically, they've given notice. And so if you're silent, they assume that that is consent. And so in April and May of last year, something is popping up on my computer here. Bear with me one moment. Apologize for this. To make a very long story short and fast forward to right now, many people became aware of the amendments and, sorry, my computer is misbehaving. And the WHO never even brought them up for discussion. They were kicked to the curb. A different set of amendments made some minor changes. And what they did at that assembly is the smaller nations essentially said to the United States, hold on a minute. We're not just going to give you all this authority. What's in it for us? And they set up a process so that they scheduled in the middle of November meetings of the working group to consider the international health regulations and amending them. And they said to all of the nations, please submit any proposals that you have by September 30th. And so I knew that that was coming. And in October, I put forth a FOIA request, actually four of them, to the United States, the State Department and the Health and Human Services Department, two people in the United Kingdom, one in Canada, South Africa, Finland, Australia, and New Zealand also submitted FOIA requests. We knew that all of the nations had those documents, and the freedom of information people in each nation, for the most part, said, go away. We're not going to give you the answer to that. I actually put in a specific freedom of information request asking just for a list of who our delegates are to the WHO. And the response I got was amazing. They said, oh, we don't keep that information, which I know they have. I just wanted to see what they would say. And so the United Kingdom responded to both people who put in a request, and they said, yeah, we have those documents, but we're not going to give them to you. And so ultimately what happened is on October 1st, what I was talking about was the working group for the international health regulations that was supposed to be all the member nations negotiating changes that they had proposed to the regulations. Well, lo and behold, on October 1st, Tedros Ghebreyesus, I say dictator general, created a review committee that answers only to him, the International Health Regulations Review Committee. 18 people wrote an article on it. You can see all who they are. Fine, upstanding, the cream of the crop, technocratic, experts. The one from the United States is Lawrence Oglethorpe Gostin. I wrote him an open letter. He's never replied to me because he's sworn to secrecy, because the entire group of 18 individuals do not represent their countries. They are not authorized to negotiate for their countries. They're just there in their expert capacity. And so this international health regulations group was put together on October 1st. They met, a week at a time and a couple of days at a time, many, many, many times in October, November, December, and now January. And what they did is they took the 197-page collection of submissions from 16 different nations. Okay. So 16 nations. I don't know what happened to Japan's documents. They seem to have disappeared, but 16 nations, four of which submitted on behalf of groups of nations. The Czech Republic submitted on behalf of the EU. Small nation in South Africa called Eswatini submitted on behalf of the African nations. Uruguay submitted on behalf of a number of South American nations, and Russia on behalf of their economic federation. And so there's many, dozens of countries. South Korea submitted late and Malaysia submitted late. And so there's 197 pages of documents that what I would like to do now is share my screen and just basically point to. Just want to make sure I got the right page here. Okay. There we go. Hopefully you can see my screen. If you can let me know that you are able to see that, that would be great.
Yes, we can see it.
Okay. So, this is a public page on the World Health Organization. And all I did was just keep coming back here day after day after day. And in mid-December, they published these three documents, okay? One of them is in the original language of the nations that submitted them. This is the 197-page documents of the proposed amendments. All right. Computer's not behaving. And so these are the nations that, here we go. These are the nations that submitted. And as you see, it says on behalf of the various groups. Okay. And it's just, you know, page after page after page of, you know, each nation's submission. Okay. And so I encourage everyone to read that. I find it entertaining. But I didn't mean to stop sharing my screen. My apologies. I meant to go to the next screen. And so this document here is the first version of a distilled group of the amendments that was prepared by the International Health Regulations Review Committee. And so this is just a 46-page document that took all of the extraneous language out of the 200 pages that were submitted by the many nations. And so when I started reading this, Article 1 is definitions. You can see that health products are pretty much all pharmaceutical-based. Article 2 was a little bit, I skipped something. They want to change standing recommendations and take away their non-binding nature. They want to take temporary recommendations, and the nomenclature here is the cross-through, means they want to remove that language from the existing document. I'll go back up here. When they strike through, it means they want to delete existing text, and underlined and bold is new, and then the rest is just existing. And so when I got down to Article 3, I'm jumping ahead. In Article 2, they wanted to add that they could declare a pandemic, declare an emergency for all risks with a potential to impact public health. They don't actually have to have an emergency or an outbreak. It just has to have the potential. But then when I got down to Article 3, my jaw dropped open and I was just absolutely shocked. They would cross out the fundamental guiding principle of how these regulations were to be implemented. What I have highlighted is the current language in the international health regulations. They currently say the implementation of these regulations shall be with full respect for the dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of persons. And they would cross that out and replace it with based on the principles of equity, inclusivity, coherence, and in accordance with their common but differentiated responsibilities of the state's parties, taking into consideration their social and economic development. And I saw myself with my jaw hanging open going, they've got to be kidding. And so there's many, many, many more details, obviously. They're having secret negotiations. This is an article that I wrote on January 3rd. They're having secret negotiations. They're quite frankly over at this time, I believe, in Geneva. It's probably past 5 p.m. In Geneva. And these meetings are either just about over or they have concluded. And their goal is to, on January 15th, on their schedule, from their documents, they want to submit these documents to the Director General so that he can then distribute them to all of the other nations. And the reason for that self-imposed deadline is in the international health regulations, the rules that govern how amendments must be presented is they have to be given 4 months in advance of the assembly. And the assembly is from May 22nd to May 31st. So right now is when they have to get them in if they want to consider adopting these in May. And so over my Christmas holiday, I put together a movie, quite frankly, get some popcorn and a beer or whatever you drink, and please watch the 100 reasons that I feel we should stop these, stop the treaty, stop the amendments, and exit the WHO. If you just scroll down here, you know, the transcript of the audio video, it's all the same. So if you watch the video, you can read the words along with it. And so I'm in the United States. So I posted an open letter to the United States. And in that letter, anybody can click this right here. And there's a system called a LINE Act that facilitates this sort of thing. And anybody in the United States can click the button, and it knows me. It has all my information there. And what this will facilitate is it will send a pre-written letter to every single member of the House of Representatives and the Senate, 435 members of the House and 100 members of the Senate. And so you can go through and see that all of the Congress people are here, and you can also give each and every one of them a phone call. Okay, their phone number is right here. And what I'm encouraging everyone to do, and here is the article where I revealed all of this. Everybody always says, what can we do? Okay, and so if you go down here, there's an activist toolbox. And at the moment, there are 14 different things that you can do. You just scroll down, all kinds of different actions that people can take. I encourage people to do that. And so one of the main aspects, and I think Whitney Webb, who's a tough act to follow, appreciate all the work that she does, and also Catherine Austin Fitz, this is about money, people. It's always about money. It's not about your health. They have created a pandemic fund through the World Bank, and it was announced at the G20. The Indonesian health minister, many people saw a clip of the Indonesian health minister saying that they had submitted amendments to the international health regulations to have a digital health certificate. And that was obviously very alarming. Nine of the articles and three of the annexes in the proposed amendments deal with testing certificates and vaccine certificates and prophylaxis certificates and recovery certificates and passenger locator forms. And, you know, they want to usher in, you know, digital IDs and, you know, vaccine passports to control people. And I personally don't refer to the international health regulations as such. They're really international surveillance regulations. But he went on to say that they had created this World Bank Pandemic Fund, $10 billion. Okay. They really want $60 billion a year. The pandemic fund was started by the United States, but these are the nations who have contributed, Germany being among them. But down at the bottom, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and the Wellcome Trust, a little bit latecomers, they were joined by France, India, and the Netherlands, and so forth. They want to have all of this money, and this is an article that I intend to publish today. So this is a preview of upcoming attractions. They want to put everybody into a digital prison. They want to enable the director general to declare an emergency and then literally have an allocation plan. I normally don't talk about communism. I really think this is fascism, where government and foundations and corporations are colluding in just organized crime. But the language that they use is right out of, you know, Marxist philosophy. they want to give the director general the control of the means of production to be able to say, this is in Article 13A, to be able to say to country A, you have to get your manufacturers to make these pandemic response products and give them to country B. And so I will stop there and say, all I'm asking is for public discussion of what in the heck are they trying to do. Congress has been silent. Parliaments in Canada and Australia, you know, we've been working with groups in the Netherlands and elsewhere. Silence. They want this to be silent. They want it to just slide through, be adopted in May. And if that was to happen quietly, the way the adoption process happens is if a simple majority of the nations that are members of the WHO vote in favor of adopting it, it is adopted. And what I mean by that is these are existing agreements that go back hundreds of years, actually, to sanitation regulations. We're already, all of the nations are already agreed to the international health regulations. Part of that agreement is an agreement as to the process by which the amendments occur. And they don't need a signature by a president or a prime minister, premier or monarch or anything. They certainly don't need a two-thirds advice and consent of the Senate or any other parliamentary procedure in any other nation, because we're already party to the agreement. And so they want to sneak these through and then begin implementing. And when the director general's recommendations now are legally binding, and everybody goes, what are you doing, right? They go, well, you know, we did this back in May, you know, coming from the future, looking back. Well, we adopted these in May of 2023, and you never objected. You never said anything. Well, in their world, they've notified us. They put some information up on a website. That's their idea of notifying the public. And so I'm just shedding light on the evidence that they provide and calling for people to discuss this openly. And there are groups in Portugal that are working to get a referendum on the ballot in Portugal so that the people can speak. A group in Louisiana got the Louisiana Assembly to put forth a resolution saying, no, the federal government does not have the authority to do this in the United States. And that's actually written on page 60 and 61 of the international health regulations. The federal government of the United States knows very well that they cannot make the individual states abide by any agreement. The states have to do it or not do it if they wish. And all of the states have to stand up for their authority, their, you know, under the 10th Amendment. None of this has been given to the federal government. It resides in the state government. And so the state of Louisiana back in May adopted a resolution saying, no, none of this will apply unless there's a referendum and the people of Louisiana say that they want this. And so I thank you so much for your time. You've allowed me to speak at great length, and I just appreciate being here. This cannot be done in silence. This must be publicly debated and discussed. And, you know, I obviously have my opinions, and my opinion is, I don't care. You know, they say they're not going to adopt it until 2024. There's a chance that they're going to ram it through this year. And they're likely to say, oh, no, we weren't going to do this until next year. And my simple opinion is you're not going to do it ever. This is an abomination. You will not be in control of the world, WHO. The people will have something to say about this. And this must stop.
Well, I think it's very important that we pull it out to the open here, that you can, so people can make up their minds. I mean, it sounds like a nightmarish situation that we discussed before, like what kind of damages the lockdowns and all these measures and all these things did to us, like in a sort of on a, you know, like health and psychological and, you know, for the society, like, you know, separation, all these kinds of things, what kind of damages we can see here. And also the extreme amount of like, you know, wasting of money on all these useless testings and these kinds of things. And obviously the World Health Organization can pull the trigger basically to look at lockdown or whatever pandemic reloaded whenever they want with these kind of regulations.
They already did it in 2009. Yeah. They already did that, exactly that. When all they had, more than 100 contracts were made with the pharmaceutical industry and nations all over the world. And those contracts all had the same contents. They all said, when WHO declares a pandemic, then the contract is in power. And the contract was that those nations should buy the drugs, the injections. And when Mrs. Chan said, now we have a pandemic, this was level number 6 then, The nations had to pay. They had to take the drugs. They had, because they had the contracts in case of urgency, emergency, in case of pandemic, so-called pandemic. And they just changed the definition what a pandemic is. And then Mrs. Chan said, yes, now we have pandemic. And it costed us, I think in Germany, we paid more than 700 million euros. This was a very small amount compared with what we are dealing with now. So they already exercised it. And the nations should have learned that they were betrayed. We had this process in the Council of Europe where we tried to shed a light into all those businesses. And they all know it. And they would be so stupid or so criminal if they do such a thing again in a much bigger scope now than we, as if we have, that we experienced in 2009. It's incredible what happens.
If I may,
and it's very great, Mr. Roguski. It's very, very, very honorable thing what you do. Thank you so much.
Well, you did I can't even begin to fill your shoes. I see a parallel. You were instrumental in stopping what they did then. I'm just putting out a plea. You know, help us stop them again. They're trying to do it, but this time, they're trying to make it legally binding. And that wasn't in place back then. It was contractually binding, okay? They want to make it internationally legally binding. This is the same kind of threat, but on a international, you know, scale where they want to literally create a totalitarian dictatorship. You know that the impossible can be done. I'm sure many people told you in 2009, oh, you're not going to be able to stop them. You're not going to be able to, you know, but, you know, the power of the people when they're given the evidence of what in the world is going on here, you know, I think you can speak to the possibility and, you know, quite frankly, the fact that if you expose what they're doing, people are smart enough to know and it stops. We just have to come together, spread the word, let everybody know. This is so egregious, you know, wiping out respect for human dignity, fundamental freedoms, and human rights. My experience has been when anybody looks at that, they get activated in a way that I have never seen. And so, you know, I'm just asking everyone in the world who has seen this to take this video and share it. You did it in 2009. We did it earlier, or rather 2022. They want to try to do this in darkness with nobody paying any attention. And all we have to do is get this out in the open and discuss it. And everybody goes, are you out of your mind? No. The answer is no. Stop it. It's just not going to happen. We're not putting up with it. And I think we will prevail. This is just insanity.
You know, there are in Europe, there are 47 member states in the Council of Europe, which made this examination in 2009. And they all agreed that it was a big crime and they all saw this. So all those parliamentarians from all those parliaments all over Europe, they watched it. And it was a big event for a Council of Europe. And you know, I got the membership of the honorable membership. I was honorable member for Council of Europe of the Parliamentary Assembly. Then afterwards, when I left, I will give back my honorable membership if those parliamentarians sleep now, if they just betray us, if they just don't watch, if they just don't protect us from this enormous organized crime we are watching. They have the responsibility. They have the power. Those parliamentarians of all those, the opposition is there. They are all there, not only the governing parties. And they should come together. They should make an initiative now. And they should stop this WHO from this big, big crime. It is not the World Health Organization. It's just a popanz. It's just a thing which is misused by organized criminals just to get out, to take over and to earn money again and have power about the people. This is horrible what we experience.
And so one of the things I always do, and people think I'm crazy, but I do it anyways. All of this is on jamesroguski.substack.com. And everyone can call me at 310-619-3055. It's that important to me. This has taken over my life because I plan on living for a very long time, and I'm not going to live under the boot of the WHO. So 310-619-3055. There's many things that can be done. And Wolfgang, you know, any advice that you can give, you know, you obviously were instrumental in stopping it in 2009. I'm open to all input from everyone in the world, because this is not just the United States problem. This is a worldwide problem. Yes. That, you know, we have to all come together. And I really do believe that when the people unite, their power is greater than the people who are trying to get power. And we just cannot give it to them with silence. You know, we have to speak up.
There is another possibility. Germany is a federal state. Like U.S., you have many states in the U.S., mm-hmm. and if some of the states just say no, mm-hmm. if in Germany two or three health ministers say no,
yes,
this would be a big power. This wouldn't go.
We have a similar situation, I believe, in some other countries, and we have gained the support already of specific politicians in Australia and elsewhere. I'm quite optimistic. I believe that my prayers will be answered. We stopped them in 2022. You stopped them in 2009. Now is the time, and you know, I so much appreciate the opportunity to present this to everyone here. Just please realize that all I'm doing is showing you the evidence of the documents that they have on their own website. I've tried to summarize them in, you know, the 100 reasons why we should not do this. But there's really just one simple reason. We have unalienable rights, and they're trying to take them away. And if we're silent, they'll take them. If we defend them, we will win. We will win.
No, they don't take them. If we are silent, we give them.
Yes, yes, yes.
Can I ask you one thing? So, the majority that's needed for these kind of things, what's that? Do they have? I mean, is it possible that they've already bought all this majority? Is it a simple majority or is it a qualified one?
It is a simple majority, and I like how you think. Each nation in the 194 nations gets one vote. So China and India with 1.5 billion people get one vote. And all of the tiny nations, many of whom are impoverished, all get one vote. So they just need, you know, half of 194 is 97, so 98. But what they prefer to do is work all these backroom deals, and then during the assembly, they'll hold up the document and say, are there any objections? Mm-hmm. And they'll wait 15 seconds, and oh, we don't hear any objections, so it has... And you know, even if you were watching them, you'd be like, what just happened? You know, you'd have to read the document and understand it. And so, you know, that's what I think they would love to do. What happened in 2022 they said, well, you know, we weren't able to reach consensus. So they never brought it up for a vote because they didn't want to be embarrassed by the fact that they would have been voted down. And so they won't bring it up for a vote if they don't have a very powerful consensus. And it's hard, it's going to be really hard for them to get consensus with us screaming at them saying, you will not do this. And so thank you so much. I just appreciate the opportunity to give the information. What needs to happen is the world just needs to become aware. And I'm quite confident that when people become aware of the horrors that are written into these proposals, I think you'll see an explosion of peaceful, absolutely peaceful, but forceful determination to stop this from happening. And I thank you.
Who is the representative? The representative of Germany, for example. I mean, who is it, and who is he responsible to? Is he sent by the German government? So, I mean, how do we influence this one person to say no the assembly?
That's an interesting question. It's a very good question. On one of the many websites that I have, you can go to stopthewho.com. If you scroll down until you see two railroad tracks, because there's two tracks, the amendments and the treaty. There's a document right above those railroad tracks that are the people who attended the last assembly. Okay. Most likely it's your health minister and such. They don't make it easy. Around the world, people have no idea. And I'm sorry, Wolfgang?
It's the ambassador in Geneva, for instance, for Germany.
Probably. The point, though, is, they are not necessarily the decision makers. They are the puppet, who the puppet masters are in each nation. That's not for question. me to guess at. The issue is whoever those people may be, right? Why are they not now having public discussions so that we, the people, could tell our delegates that we demand that they say no, right? They're not doing that because, this is not meant to be democratic. It's meant to be a totalitarian, dictatorial, world control mechanism. They don't want the people to diverge a little bit. Back in April, we got 33,884 people within a week to submit public comments. And again, I have that on my Substack. They buried it. They hid it. They actually canceled their next public comment period in June. Now, this is for the treaty, not the amendments. They canceled their public comment period. And only in September did they finally publish the public comments. And 99.9% of them were, no, we don't want you to do this. Okay. In September, they did a very contrived pseudo public comment period. If you go, and this is my favorite thing, and I do have to go, so I'll leave you with this. In September, I put out the word so that people would create 90-second videos expressing their opinion about the pandemic treaty. And they're all collected on a website titled screwthewho.com. So if you want to learn what common people around the world and some well-known people had to say about the treaty back in September, go to screwthewho.com. And so the issue is the public needs to learn about this. Thank you so much for the opportunity to, be on your platform to share this. It's just evidence that we need to be able to examine. I don't know when we're going to be allowed to see the second version of the document that they published in December. They're submitting it on Sunday to the WHO. And last year, when they did that, they never published it on the United States website, and they didn't reveal it on the WHO website until April 12th, about 5 weeks before the assembly. So they are likely to try to hide that document. And we already have the first draft, and it's an abomination. Maybe it's going to completely change in what happened this past week in secret. It doesn't matter. it's not supposed to be secret.
Absolutely. Sunlight is the best of disinfectants. So
in Germany, we have responsible persons is three persons. It's the chancellor, the boss of the government. The second is the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Mr. Hupp, and he is the Minister for Foreign Affairs is the green politician. She's the boss of the ambassador who is sent there. And the third is the health minister, Mr. Lauterbach. So this is the three main persons in Germany who are responsible for what Germany will do in Geneva.
And so I invite everyone to, you know, go through the information and give me a phone call, 310-619-3055. I do have to go. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for your hard work. It's really fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.